Welcome back to the Warp Core, a podcast about Star Trek TV shows, movies, and temporal spatial anomalies. I am your captain, Dan Moore, and I'm joined, as always, by First Officer John Moltz.
Dan, I'm going to let that go because I know you're suffering some grief right now.
I am always suffering grief. We're also joined by Chief Medical Officer Dr. Guy English. How are you, Guy?
Welcome back to The Bad Motivator, a podcast where we talk about Star Wars exclusively.
Wait, are you inceptioning my inception joke? Is that what's happening? So, God. Uh-huh. I've been one-upped.
Who wants to talk about Space 1999, huh?
Kind of. I kind of would.
Now, I've never watched it. I have never seen it.
It's tough to watch now. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's 25 years old. They were past 1999.
I was just like, man, this is way worse than I remembered it.
So their ship sort of scooped the blockade runner, which was going to be the original Millennium Falcon. You know that lot, like
I can't even parse that sentence.
So the blockade runner from A New Hope from Star Wars looks very similar to this ship from Space 1999, and so they abandoned the blockade runner was going to be Han Solo's ship, and they abandoned.
Yeah, I knew it was going to be the Falcon.
Which is you know what? I've just been rewatching Light and Magic, that excellent ILM documentary.
That's a good documentary.
With Amanda, and yeah, that's in like the first or second episode. It's such a good documentary.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah,
I did see that.
Man. Yeah, Martin really Landau was in so many good shows.
Yeah, Martin Landau.
We just talk about that. You guys want to talk about that?
Sure. We have, actually.
Martin Landau.
I think we did, didn't we?
We did. We've got a whole episode of Biff just on that.
Welcome back to the Martin Landau episode.
I apparently don't remember it that well. But
all right. Computer and program.
Kick into the
Welcome
danger room.
Welcome back to Biff.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. That's a great segue. Like the holodeck just goes away and it turns into the danger
when
room.
When I show up to cause chaos on a problem, it is carefully scripted.
That's not
antithetical
chaos,
to the nature of the chaos. I understand that. I show up to play.
That's lawful evil.
Yeah. I show up to play.
But we do owe you one. So if you want to cause a little bit of havoc, I can stitch it together in post.
Three seconds of warp core here. I was rewatching The Defector the other day, and man, that is the best use of the holodeck, where they, you know, you take Data, takes him in there, and he's like, "Here's Romulus, and enjoy." And he's like, "No, I don't live here anymore. Turn it off." And then it's like, it's the holodeck, you know, it's that grid pattern. He's like, "This is where I live now." It's like, "Oh,
yeah." And then he's like, "Okay, take me to Picard. Yeah, I'm going to come clean." It's like, okay, can't. Yeah, yeah,
rough. Anyway. All right. Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, and other stuff. My name is Dan Moore, and I'm joined, as always, by John Moltz. Hi, John.
Yeah, I know you're still grieving.
Just keep doing it. It's fine.
I only had the one thing.
Guy English is also here.
I don't know why you reintroduced this. I'm keeping what
I don't know. I was committing to the bit.
He's doing a bit.
Do you know what, though? For as much grief as we give you, I'd listen to A Complicated Profession. And I think we're reasonably well behaved in comparison.
It's just tough always being the adult in the room. Like, I kind of want to quit sometimes. I'm just, it's too much to be the responsible person. I want to have fun and cut loose like everybody else. I'm Cyclops. It's fine.
He's one of my favorites, though. Why don't you walk us through the three episodes of X-Men 97?
Four.
That we are,
four my friend.
Yeah. What, three to seven, right?
So we're going to cut episodes four through seven. Yep. And we're going to, let's go through by plot
lines. So eight is out by the time of this, as we record.
Yes, but we're only going to go through
two
seven.
Two of us have seen it, but we're not going to discuss it because it starts a three-part arc.
And I think the easiest way to break this up is to talk about a couple different storylines, and we'll let's do a couple of the smaller ones first. Episode four, the first section of that, because it's actually sort of two half episodes, is Motendo, in which Jubilee wants to celebrate her birthday by playing video games, and Magneto is all, "You are an X-Men, you can't go play video games." And they
kids
play
these days.
Yeah, so they get sucked into a video game by Mojo, where Jubilee has to go back and re-experience moments from the original series, until she eventually meets a version of herself from the future.
So when you say the original
digital
series,
copy of herself,
when you say
the original X-Men, '90s series, a lot of things in there are from things from the X-Men series, the old cartoon.
Yeah, Mojo seemed bigger in the cartoon than he was in the comics, but maybe maybe I just tuned out of the comics when he was there. Because Longshot was a Mojo character, right?
Yes, because it was all Mojo World. Is that where
Mojo World? Yeah, it just never really turned my crank. I didn't care for it.
I mean, so this is kind of a slight thing. I mean, it's like 15 minutes, right, and 20 minutes stops.
Oh, sure.
And it's I enjoyed it for the kind of little Easter eggs and the video game jokes. You know, you do like some 8-bit art, and there are references to the classic X-Men arcade game in there at a couple points. And they even make a joke about if you die in the game, you die in real life. Check. Which to me is just, it felt like a little, you know, I liked it because it was short. It hit all its beats and then it was over. And it's like, we're not going to make this go on for half an hour because that would be too much stuff, but we'll do like 15 minutes of this. And I thought it was nice. And it sort of sets up the Jubilee, Sunspot relationship.
Yeah, I did like it. And, Jubilee was kind of the main point of view character for the original X-Men. Is that fair to say? Yeah. She's one of them. Yeah, she's certainly our introduction to it.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's kind of nice for, I guess, fans of the original to share some more time with her. Because in a lot of these stories, she's just kind of off on her own with Roberto.
Right.
Not really being implicated in the main story a lot.
The version of her
affected by it for sure,
but not like
And Roberto is kind of taking her role in this show. In fact, to the point where in the opening credits, there's the scene where he runs up against like the chain link fence, which is shot the same shot from the original opening from the old cartoon, but in that one, it's Jubilee. So they basically have the same exact scene, but they swapped out him for her. And that's again, the first episodes of this series were kind of a replayish version of the original one, except with Roberto instead of Jubilee.
Yeah, it's a play of the X-Men, which I kind of like. I sort of even liked it when The Force Awakens did it, just to bad motivate you for a second. Like, if it works and it's a good setup, there's no shame in doing it again. And I like that in this time through, Jubilee is the one sort of taking him under her wing. And
it's growth for her.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And then the version of her that she meets, who's from like the beta version of the game, which is like turns out to be her like super old kind of like, didn't Tron kind of do that too, is voiced by the original series as Jubilee voice actor.
Oh, cool. I didn't know that.
So I think that it's just, it felt like a little cute short story, and I thought it was nicely done, didn't overstay its welcome. And kind of moved on. And I thought that was I got thumbs up from it. It's not like life shaking or anything. It's not like, but it was like a nice break from some of the heaviness, both before in the prior episode, as well as in some of the subsequent stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of liked it better than the Storm stuff, actually.
I agree.
Yeah. So anyway, we can talk about that.
Well, we can talk about that next.
Yeah.
I did, you brought it up, but I liked the choice of different art styles. I liked you know, going the bad dude side scrolling fight, like it's the X-Men game, but like that style of, like, you know, I liked it. I thought it was clever. Mojo is not a villain I particularly care about, but as like a little 15 minute vignette,
that's a real like
moment in
period
time.
In time of the
X-Men,
right?
Exactly, yeah.
With Mojo and the luck guy, what's it?
Longshot.
Yeah.
It was like late 80s.
I remember really liking Spiral for some reason, and I can't remember why.
Spiral, the one with all the arms?
Yeah. I think she does something cool at some point, and I can't for the life of me remember what it was. Like, she switches sides or something, I think, doesn't she?
Yeah, because like a lot of them used to be Mojo's henchmen, right? Henchfolk. Yeah. Anyway, I can't remember.
Yeah, Mojo here, I feel like, I think the Grandmaster from the MCU movies borrows a little bit of the Mojo shtick.
Yes.
Like of the, like, entertaining the masses and being this, like, you know, all-powerful character, essentially. And so I appreciate there's, like, also sort of the pivot into video games, because, I mean, I think originally Mojo is about, like, TV, basically.
Yeah, it's all TV.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all like a TV spoof. Yeah, it's like an sort 80s, of satire. Yeah,
like an 80s boob tube kind
and
of.
And it's
like,
all about ratings. Yeah. And,
So, fine, cute, fun. Should we talk about... I'm gonna bring up, before we go to the storm one, which is the second part of this episode, I'm going to bring up what I think is my least favorite part of these episodes, which is, I don't know about you, I do not care about the Shi'ar at all.
Oh, yeah.
I thought the Xavier plot here is like, I know they kind of want to do it because they want us to know where Professor X is and what's going on with him. I just don't care about any of that. I do find the bit...
I don't really either.
I liked the bit where he... puts them in the classroom.
He literally he literally schools
puts
them.
An apple in someone's mouth.
Exactly. I thought that was amusing, but I just don't. I don't have enough engagement with any of those other characters to have any stakes, really.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I've read a lot of the X-Men, and I know those characters not super well, but I know those characters, and I still don't. care that much. Even like a lot of them are fairly I want to say cardboardy. I mean, they're not like, they're so over the top
generic alien
kind. Well, not just,
I mean,
generic
Guardians,
alien,
like just
but
a Superman type of guy. Yeah, it's very
are very kind of bland. What's her name, Warbird, is that
Deathbird?
She's
worse,
mustache twirling.
I mean, The only interesting part of this is sort of like linking Charles in back to like stuff that's happening on Earth, which we will get to. But I feel like, you know, it's mainly there to table set him coming back.
Yeah.
All right. Storm has moved to Forge's ranch because he's got a machine that can bring her powers back, but it doesn't seem to work. Except then there's a spooky owl. And Forge admits that he basically built the stuff to make the mutant inhibitor colors and the gun that took her power away. And so she runs away. And then the owl is a demon. And, I found this confusing and a little like, I just kind of tuned. I realized I had tuned out and like,
yes,
I had
I
to go
too.
Back and like, what's happening? I like Storm. I like Forge. I like both of those characters. I don't even mind their relationship. I just think that whole plot is kind of, it's a little too, let's get into the dream world and the, like, what's real?
Sort of unnecessarily in the dream world. Like, I don't think you needed that. I mean, like, I think it would have worked better, which, I'm trying to remember how this played out in the comic book. I think there, you know, I think he definitely has run up against a demon like that previously and definitely shows up, but I just remember them arguing over it more. I mean, I just remember them, you know, of her being completely hurt that he's the one who came up with this weaponry. And
I maybe part of it is also just the having to split this between two episodes, I think maybe hurts it a little bit. Maybe it would have been a little tighter if it had been a single episode. But I also just think for whatever reason, the plot doesn't work for me. I like that she gets her powers back. I like that she's got her cool classic costume and loses the mohawk, which is confusing, but it's, you know.
There wasn't like a lot of struggle for her to get, that's maybe not fair, but like in the comics, she is depowered for a good long while and then learns how to still be the leader of the X-Men, despite not being powered. I think she beats up Cyclops at some point.
She beats up Cyclops without her powers,
which is fine. And a horrible way to pick a leader, by the way, but whatever.
Yes.
But, so like...
Wakanda, similarly.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. But I didn't get that sense here. I mean, it was... I got the sense that she was very emotionally distraught about being depowered, but I didn't... We didn't spend enough time with her being depowered and learning
to
interact with other people.
It's shorthanded too much.
It's tough when you have only a few episodes, right? Like,
Maybe don't do it in a few episodes. Like, choose some other mechanism for doing it. And I don't know about you, but I that demon Mephisto-y kind of thing. I don't know what's supposed to be Mephisto, but it's asking.
The adversary is what they call it. Sure. Which is basically Satan. I mean...
Yeah. I mean, it's
which is Mephisto.
I just yeah, there's no, it's too what's the word I'm looking for? Shapeless, too vacuous, too, doesn't really have an interesting, like, I don't get it. I don't know what it is, why it's there, why it
and
cares.
It shows up like, just sort of like out of nowhere, kind of.
Yeah. Expected it to become the Phoenix or be a manifestation of the Phoenix force in some way.
If only to tie some stories.
That would make sense.
In the comics, I kind of like this backstory more, and they don't really get into it, which is, and I can kind of see why, because like there's certainly some issues with it, but like basically, so the Wikipedia page says, during the Vietnam War, Forge saw his company slain, tapped into his long suppressed shamanic heritage to summon the adversary to destroy the attackers, but then tried to banish it, but it was like still around. So, I mean, I kind of like the idea that it's more linked to Forge, but they don't. Because we've only just met Forge, it feels like they don't really want to go into that. So,
not that backstory.
Yeah, I mean, and also
I think it definitely came out that it was connected to Forge, that it was sort of his fault. But I think what you're going to say is it's a little Akuchimoya, right?
I was going to say it's a little Chicote. Yeah.
That's what I was. That's what he kept. That's what he always said, Akuchimoya.
Yeah. Which is. You know, I guess there's a time and a place for or it is of its time and place of when they wrote it, and I'm glad that they didn't just bring that up again. That's fine. I kind of got that this demon adversary was connected to him because of bad choices he made, which is unleashing, depowering Storm, but also sort of unleashing all of the Sentinel havoc on the world. Like, that's the demon that's haunting him, but it's kind of amorphous. Like visually, but
yeah, amorphous is a good word.
But also in a story way, I couldn't latch on to exactly what this was meant to represent and why.
Yeah, it didn't have its own motivations other than like I'm evil and I'm tormenting you and
Or it's his guilt consuming him, but I don't know why it's messing with Storm. Like I didn't get it, basically.
Yeah. I think it could have been stronger. Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about the meat of these four episodes, which is, I'd say, more or less a two-parter, which is episode 5, Remember It, and episode 7, Bright Eyes. Episode 5, Remember It, basically follows a bunch of the team, goes to Genosha, where Genosha is going to join the UN. Magneto gets asked to lead the country, and he agrees as long as Rogue joins him. Rogue comes clean to Gambit about his relationship with Magneto, because she could touch him without hurting him. And then there's a big gala, where she and Magneto dance and kiss. And then she realizes that she's actually in love with Gambit. Cable shows up. That's what Cable does, is show up briefly and be like, wait a second. And then, enough to say hi, Mom, to Madeline, who realizes that he's Nathan, but then is pulled back before he can warn everybody, which is basically a ton of Sentinels attack Genosha and kill lots of people in some amazing and devastating action sequences that culminate in Gambit sacrificing himself to destroy the Master Mold.
Does a very good job with the action sequences.
Oh, yeah.
It really does.
It's one of the things that turned me off. I mean, and I didn't, again, I watched one episode, I think, of the very first episode, so maybe it got better, but that all the action sequences turned me off of like watching that show with my son when he was young enough for it. And this show, to the contrary, I think it excels at that stuff.
It's learned a lot. I mean, that's evolved a lot in the last, I think, 20 odd years. But yeah, I mean, I think it looks great. It feels great. It has emotional weight to it, I think, is the other big thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, we also see, we think, as we learn later, maybe not, Magneto basically trying to save a bunch of people and the Sentinels totally like blowing him away.
Magneto telling the kid Artie to like, don't be afraid in German was like, oh, God, that.
Yeah.
That, oh, man, that was like, they were landing some heavy, heavy punches here.
Mm-hmm.
Really rough. And like, you know, I keep kind of joking that I don't like Gambit. It's not really a joke. I don't like Gambit. But man, that guy.
I love Gambit, and this broke my heart.
Yeah, I know. I wanted to ask you. But like, I felt it. I'm like, that was cool as hell. Like, that is, you know.
I think what's, yeah, there are some cool things. They expand. I think they think a lot more laterally about if your power was what Gambit's power was, how else could you use that rather than just the playing card thing, which often gets, you know, like, right. All he can do is charge playing cards. No, he can charge anything. And that bit at the end where he gets impaled and then uses that to charge up the entire Sentinel is awesome, but also really sad. And I love his line, too, where it's like, you know, the name's Gambit, remember it. And then everything blows up. I mean, it got me choked up, man. It's good stuff. That was a good, weighty, emotional death. And like, I'm sad about it, but also like, what a way to go out.
Yeah. And I think from everything that I've seen from this reboot of the show, I suspect they're just going to stick with that. Like, that cat ain't coming back. I think.
I would think so, too. I think there's room for him to be resurrected by Sinister in a evil fashion, right?
But, maybe, like, you don't want to go to that well too much either, right? Like, and you don't want to cheapen a good death, right?
Especially, honestly,
with the second part of this.
I like Gambit, so.
Yeah. I mean, I don't like, if he comes back, I'll be happy for Dan, but whatever. but they killed Madeline, too.
We'll be very happy together.
They killed Madeline. Yeah, I guess. Killed a whole bunch of characters that were.
And it's interesting. I think I sent this to you guys a few weeks ago, right around the time this aired. But Bo DeMeo, who is the series creator, who left before the show aired, wrote a whole like thread on this online about this episode and how this was sort of the center, the heart of his pitch about this show to Marvel. And he talks about it being a lot of it being drawn from both, you know, growing up in an era of September 11th and also specifically talking about the Pulse nightclub shooting, which was something that I guess part of the community that he was in. Like, and so this idea of having these places that you think are safe for, you know, your community and suddenly having that safety pulled away by a terrible act of violence.
Yeah.
And I think he really manages.
Arbitrary. It's targeted violence at, you know, mutants or gay people.
For being who you are. And that, you know, I think he they nailed it, honestly, the way it feels, just the almost, I know you say it's terroristic and I agree with that, but the almost arbitrary way and when it happens, right? Like, you have this moment. Most of this episode is like not about this. Like, the first half or 20 minutes of this episode is like there's character drama and then they're at this really big gala and everything, and you're like, oh, it's all going to be about, like, you know, Rogue choosing between Gambit and Magneto, and like that's what this episode is. And then it just left, like, it kind of comes out of nowhere, and like that makes it all the more terrifying.
I had kind of checked out, if you need to know the truth. I was like, okay, whatever. I don't really understand.
I hadn't
this.
Checked out, but I know what you mean. I was sort of like buckled half in watching. for a soap opera episode.
Yeah, that's which is fine. It just, I kind of don't care about their relationship that much.
No, I don't either. But
I suddenly did when it refused to be a love triangle and became I don't know, some kind of communal love for each other and like protecting everybody. Like, seeing Magneto taking care of kids and all that was a big deal. Seeing Gambit, like, you'd almost expect it to be the opposite, like Gambit trying to save people and Magneto taking the fight to the bad guys, or you know, to the attackers. It was one of those times that I was completely taken by surprise by a cartoon, which I thought was setting up for one kind of episode and then completely pivoted. And it so did what it did to me as a viewer, what I think it did to the populace of Genosha there, which is like, when you're least expecting it, horrible, horrible things happen, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I think it was really well written. It looked, hate to say gorgeous, but like, you know, for an episode that's this like violent, but it is extremely, you know, well realized. and I thought this was an extremely effective episode.
Thoughtful shots too, like Magneto, he's getting blasted by, I don't know, Master Mold or something. He's getting really blasted and he's got some kind of shield going on. And when he tells already the kid to like, don't worry or something, you'll be okay. It's a close-up shot on his face. Because it could have been a wider shot where you see him being all powerful and trying to stop a laser beam, but it's a quiet character moment, and like they choose those well. You know what I mean? Like, I get the sense in the early one in the 90s. I know they were budget constrained and all of that, and this one seems to have the budget, the time, and the sensibility to actually spend time with characters in little moments and set up. Like, you got to draw a whole new frame, you know, which is
right.
Used to be more annoying than it is now, but they're spending the time to do it, and it's paying off in spades. So yeah, beautiful may not be the right word for it, but it is a compelling visually told story.
Artful.
There you go.
Yeah. So this leads into episode 7, which opens with Gambit's funeral. Rogue is not there. She is looking for Gyrick and Trask, basically to find out who made the Sentinels. She crashes in on Thunderbolt Ross, who shows up here to get information from him.
I know we're going to see him in the new Captain America movie, but this facility was built to contain the Hulk. Dude, how many times has the Hulk just bust at, like, you have
escape things,
your confidence is so
you built a lot of things to stop the Hulk.
It's so exactly
your credibility is low
every single thing.
General, let me ask you one question. Does this facility contain the Hulk right now?
Right.
Because if not, it's not doing what it was supposed to do.
Yeah And then she kind of needs to explain, it's like, well, it's easier to break in, but whatever. Like,
yeah,
I really liked her going on a tear. That was fun.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, Rogue. Yeah. It reminds you that Rogue is very scary, right? Like, she is super powerful. Mm-hmm. And do not mess with her. We also then subsequently get a showdown with her and Cap, which is kind of a fun.
Is it a showdown? So much as he just gives her the shield at one point, right? He throws it at her feet, and then he just lets her hold it the whole time. It's like he doesn't ask for it back.
He doesn't need to care.
Well, I know. But it's also like, it's just, I really like the visual of that, of like, look, my weapon, such that it is a shield, and I'm going to let you have it. So, like, I am at my weakest right now, right? Like, I've even given up my defense to you. So let's just have a chat and try to get to the bottom of this mess together. I felt it was very Captain America, like very.
I like their conversation. I mean, she kind of gives him grief for being like, you know, the top cop, which I kind of enjoyed.
Rude.
Yeah, but
he
not
is
wrong.
Acting a bit like that in this.
Yeah,
in this
episode.
He's not wrong. She's not wrong.
A little bit of an ACAB going on, but you know, he's right. Trying to be good at least. Yeah.
I mean, he is Cap, right? Like, he's wearing the flag, right?
Yeah,
and like,
exactly.
You know, that always carries some challenging connotations with it. But I enjoyed their sort of rapport here and discussion about like what exactly is going on. Rogue finds Gyrick in Mexico and takes his memories, and which presages him getting murdered later that evening by a mysterious assailant.
So explain careful to me.
Yeah.
What happens here? Because she takes his memories, we get a flash, we see Nimrod and a bunch of other jazz, and then she's in an alleyway.
I think she's basically gets overwhelmed by it.
So she ends up in an alley.
That was my reading. Well, she like zonks, like it like zaps her out.
Isn't there a reason?
Yeah.
I think there's a reason, but
she's in a different place. Like, I do not understand. When Nightcrawler finds her, I'm like, how? What? Like, why is she there? How do they find her? They seem to be outside. I don't know where.
Because it seemed like there was some sort of feedback she was getting, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't just a normal instance of her.
Oh, yeah. No.
Like, he was sort of glowing, wasn't he? I can't.
I think maybe it has to do with the guy who murders him, potentially. There must be some.
Yeah, I think there maybe was some sort of like booby trap there.
Yeah, I think something's afoot is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. The X-Men are in Genosha trying to rebuild things and find survivors. Trask calls them to tell them he's in Madripoor. And they basically find out there that there's this OZT organization which has been building like super advanced sentinels, human sentinels. And then we, in a kind of chilling scene, they find Trask, who's going to jump, and like Rogue starts interrogating him and then drops him.
Yeah.
Which turns him into a apparently human sentinel hybrid.
Which is weird that nobody stops her, right?
Yeah.
Isn't Jean there? I mean, Jean could have just lifted him.
Everyone's like, she's going to, she's going to fly down and catch him, probably, right? Probably. She's going to go. Oh, I guess
like,
she did.
Are you going to, who's going to, wait? Oh, we really dropped the ball.
You know,
when
you see a bunch of outfielders all run together and then the ball falls in the middle? It's a little bit like that.
Yeah, it's somebody invoked the infield fly rule.
Yeah, there is a little bit of that. Like maybe there's a moment of hesitation because nobody actually wants to save him. But it's like, I feel there's enough capable people on that team there that, you know, Gene could have grabbed him for sure. Yeah. But it was weird. And again, I wasn't sure if that was a reaction to her having getting her mind all scrambled. Like it was weird. It felt a little out of character, but again, she's in a rage, so who knows, you know?
I don't disagree. Yeah, I mean, it feels out of character, but also, like, the whole point of this episode is that she is just destroyed.
She's spiraling out of control.
Yeah, and I don't mind that. I mean, that's a...
Yeah, not I think it's okay.
Yeah, not unreasonable reaction to everything that she has witnessed.
Oh, yeah.
In the past couple episodes.
I just... What does Logan say? She's his claws, and he's like, I forget. There was some vague satisfaction with like the fact that she
he was basically like, yeah, whatever, that guy deserved to die. Which is very Logan.
Logan's all over it.
Yep. Well, he's like, I'm not gonna go down and catch him.
Well, it's okay because he comes back and they get a chance to really, you know, put the screws to him.
And they get their butts whooped until Cable shows up and shoots Trask with an EMP and tells him that Mr. Sinister is part of this whole plot, but is working with a greater threat, which is the guy who also murdered Gyrick. I don't know how much you guys know about this villain. I know very little about him. He is a guy named
Bastion. I read a bunch of stuff with him in it, but a long time ago, and so I don't recall most of what's fresh in my mind is what comes in the next episode, so...
Yeah. He is basically working with Sinister and tells Sinister that Xavier, like, we caught the TV broadcast from the Shi'ar. So Xavier's alive. And also, I've got Magneto, who is also alive.
Yep.
There's also a subplot in this episode with Gambit's still dead. With Roberto and Jubilee going to Roberto's mother to out him as a mutant. And she's very understanding until then. She says, we have to keep this a secret from everybody because we don't want people in our investors in our company to know that our son's a mutant.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a fun, like, now fun is not the right word, but I thought that was a good take on it, which is like, we've moved past the acceptance, but also still a stigma that is attached to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I thought that was,
we're doing it for business reasons.
That feels like something. That feels like a thing that maybe the creator, Bo, I'm forgetting his last name.
DeMeo.
Bo DeMeo may have had, not personal experience, but like people in his community. He's a gay dude, basically. Like you can, your immediate family can love and accept you, but still kind of want to keep you closeted in a way.
Sure.
Like that. Mm-hmm. It felt poignant. Like,
Don't tell Grandpa. Grandpa's not ready for this.
Right. Yeah. There's always like something, you know, like, oh, well, you don't want to, you know, and I kind of liked it. Like when she was excited to see them and very open about it, I'm like, oh, this is good. This went a different way than I expected. Only to have this new level, this new tweak on it to be introduced, which I thought is a very, mature is not the right word, but it's a more nuanced take on it than what we get out of like X-Men 2. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's realistic. You know, like I like the X-Men 2 scene where it's like, have you tried not being mutant? Okay. But like this is like a tweak, it's sort of like an advanced studies class of like what it means to be, in a more marginalized community that I had not anticipated. And
yeah,
you know,
it's also, it feels like it's like moving the goalposts, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I kind of, you know, it's a, like you said, there's a realism to it that is both refreshing and awful, like at the same time. I don't know if that's the thing that we talk about that's both together. It's like, yeah, it's telling it like it is, which is good because you don't want to sugarcoat it. But at the same time,
yeah,
the thing that you're telling you is not good.
Yeah. I mean, it'll wake you up like getting a latrine dumped on your head, I guess. I don't know. Maybe I'm going to edit that. I don't know what I'm trying to say. It's like, it is a shock. It is, I guess, it's one of the better moments of this show where they can do something like that that isn't, in fact, pretty nuanced. And it all fits as part of the show, despite this being sort of a B-plot. And it expands what it wants to say and what the meaning of being an ostracized, a member of an ostracized community means. I think it's so deftly done that I don't really have the words to explain it, but I just want to underscore again that, like, it is shocking. It is, I don't want to say, I'm trying to avoid the word it awakening, or like it opens your eyes to like a whole new level of difficulty that, you know, mm-hmm. people have to overcome. So yeah, just
yeah that's I think it's,
we had this in the same show as Mojo, so it's like it's a bit of a Ben's issue, you know.
It contains multitudes. Yeah, so that's our super quick overview of these four episodes. I mean, you guys want to, anything else you want to mention or call out?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I just, like, I'm, like I said, I'm surprised at how much I'm enjoying the action in this. They always put a little twist in there, and I'm having a hard time thinking of exactly what I mean, but just, first of all, yeah, I mean, like we said, the emotional weight of the action seems more heavy than what I would have expected, I guess. And then the style of it is really well done.
The entire style of the show, there's a couple, I was thinking of shots that stood out. There's a couple of like head-on shots of Rogue at a couple points, like flying at the camera, which feel like a thing that they never would have done. They never would have done in the original show. But like, I love how well this show deftly handles looking like the original show, but also advancing, like being a modern animated show. Like, it's, that is impressive to me that they can do both of those things. And I think that's worth calling out.
I don't watch enough anime. I mean, I've seen the basics, but it feels, especially in these fight scenes, that there's a strong influence from like
the
Japanese
language
animation.
Of anime.
Absolutely. Like, you know, characters in a held pose moving across the screen kind of thing. Big, bright lights, that kind of stuff.
I haven't noticed any of the backgrounds repeating.
Well, yeah. Well, because they've got the budget, right? Like, that's...
Yeah.
Like, some of these
styles... And that's not an anime thing. That's just old style.
Yeah, exactly. Some of the style of animation stuff has more to do with, like, what the budget is than... It's like Scooby-Doo running down the same corridor for, like, you know...
Right.
Right. Yeah, exactly. We're just going to replay. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a great looking show. I was going to call it the other scene that stuck with me a little bit. There's some Scott Jean stuff. We're not going to go into all of that, like some drama. But I do enjoy, there's one scene where there's a little bit of like them talking about Madeline and
constantly.
The connection with her and all of this. And
I guess so. They seem to be, they're handling it better than Ollie and Felicity would, I guess.
Yeah, like,
you know,
there is, it manages to not take over the show, which is nice. And they manage to be like adults and kind of work through their problems, which is also nice.
Yes. And it is a difficult, weird problem to be like, okay, I was married and had a child with somebody who looks identical to you. And that's a
clone. A clone of you.
That's
weird, more.
It's a weird thing to be like having to deal with. And, you know,
there's no handbook for that one.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, for all of the potentially incredibly fraught feelings that could bring up, I feel like they're doing a pretty decent job. So, and Jean seems, she's definitely not Cable's mother, but she has a like a
maternal.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, okay, that's God's son, and it's in a way my child, and she definitely feels very invested in Cable, at least for Scott's sake, and probably her own too. It's again a more nuanced take on a weird situation than I would expect a cartoon to have. In fact, some of the live action stuff we've seen would bungle this. So,
yeah, right. And I was going to say that the there's just one little shot that I enjoyed where he's talking to, who's he talking to? He's on like a phone call with like the UN or something, Scott, and he's wearing his glasses and the outfit with the cowl like pulled back.
Yeah, I love it.
Which I just thought was kind of a cool look. Again, a thing that you never would have done in the original show because it's expensive.
Yeah,
like to show them in a different outfit, basically. And so I enjoyed that they like well, let's mix it up. Sometimes he goes business casual, you know.
Yeah, one of the things that kind of frustrates me a little, not frustrates, but it's true in the comics too, is like when they're just hanging out in their costumes all of the time, like
yeah, right,
you know, gets a bit much. Like maybe wash that thing. Like how many? I think Wolverine probably has a lot
I'm
of
sure
those.
I'm sure they have multiple.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he would have to, but the way he gets them all ripped up. But yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Jean seems to be a little bit more, she dresses casual more than like Scott, I guess. But anyway, I'm trying to remember what is in these with regards to Cable. I don't love Cable, to be honest.
No. Like, I mean, I don't love him in this. Yeah, I don't love him in this, I'll say.
The whole Scott, like the Summers family values is like a little too intricate and bananas for me.
Yeah, there's a lot happening.
Yeah. I honestly do think that they've killed Madeline. I don't think she's coming back. I think they're done with that.
I don't know where else that story goes, but exactly. Yeah, I mean, like I fully imagine she could come back at some point, but like, yeah. I mean, I don't think it's going to be a while.
Yeah. In the comic book, she just keeps coming back to torture them constantly. Like right. she's still mad that she's Jean's clone or whatever. And she will be mad about that forever and will keep coming back and being evil.
Maybe she should just hang out with Ben Parker and like call it a day.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I don't see there's a lot to get out of that here, but
go to Clone Town.
You don't throw out any characters if you feel like you could have some use for them in the future.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Even when you throw them out, they can be pulled out of the trash and the paper smoothed out again.
Yeah, that's right. We could still use this.
Mm-hmm. Look, this is fine.
Yeah, and I'm not. Early in this season, I thought there would be some time travel shenanigans to undo stuff. I think that they've been hitting things with such a hard lead pipe that I don't think they're going to do that. I think they need to make this permanent. You know, Genosha has to carry the weight that it did, or else I think you start playing.
Nothing matters. Yeah.
Yeah. You start playing with stuff that's just, you know, even the biggest, most hurtful things become inconsequential. So I think you got
to. Nobody wants to get to season 5 and be like, oh, remember that time they briefly blew up Genosha and then everything was fine again?
Yeah.
That's the weird thing about this is you could have easily done this with Bishop instead of Cable, right?
Yes.
You could have and skipped the whole Cable story.
Well, Cable's already been in the show, too.
Yeah,
the original
I know he's
show.
Already been in the show, but you didn't have to do his origin in this. You could have just used Bishop for it because he basically fulfills Bishop's role, although, other than the child stuff.
I mean, but it feels like there is a, you know, they want to do more Summer stuff. Yeah. And Nathan stuff. So I did see there is a trailer out there, by the way, for the last few episodes. And I don't know if this is in the one you watch, but one of the bits in there includes a joke about the X-Men movie we recently watched.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I don't think
I've seen that trailer that you're talking about. That specific joke is not in the
It's still
episode.
Pretty good. It made me laugh. Okay. But yeah,
it's an inconsequential joke. It's like
it is inconsequential, but it was funny.
Yeah, I'm going to go watch it.
Anyway, all right. Well, there's 3 episodes left to go, which we will cover in a few weeks.
I did want to do a quick conspiracy corner.
Yeah, let's do that.
We will try to, John and I will try to elide or not think of anything from the one that we have seen.
Just make your mind a blank.
Taking Nate into the future creates this techno-organic virus. Is that the cause? Like, how how do we wrap all of these storylines together? Because I feel they're going to wrap up together in some nice, maybe a little bit weird timey-wimey, cause and effecty kind of thing. But I don't think that all of these things are completely disparate, with the exception maybe of the adversary, which I completely don't understand. But Dan, did you have a theory of like what's going to happen?
I don't know. I mean, so just speaking from a production point of view, there is a second season that is in production, and season 3 is in development. So this is clearly intended to be a multi-season show, right? They're not going to wrap it up at the end of this arc here. I think what's possibly interesting about this is the ability to rotate through character rosters. I mean, the thing about the X-Men is there are tons of X-Men.
Yeah.
And we tend to focus on the same few, but you know, you get an opportunity to experience everyone. Like, I enjoy that they change the intro depending on which characters are currently alive or dead.
Yeah.
So like Nightcrawler shows up in the last couple in the intro. Gambit is gone. Magneto is gone. Professor X has not been in it since the first one. Like, I enjoy that you can kind of use this as an opportunity to explore different characters.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really know where this is going, but it does seem like, I don't know enough about Bastion as a villain to kind of understand what his motivations here are, because he himself seems to be a mutant, and yet he seems to be invested in destroying mutants using the Sentinels. So I assume they will do some time travel shenanigans, even though they have done some of those in the past with Bishop. And maybe that's the reason they don't use Bishop here, is like they kind of already did, like they did their own version of Days of Future Past at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And they did some other Bishop stuff with like the alternate future where he is pals with Cable. So I don't know. I honestly have no idea where this is going. And I'm kind of intrigued to see this last arc.
Cool.
I've
seen one step ahead.
I don't have a theory either.
Yeah, I don't really have a theory, and I was just more curious about, because you have sensibility for the original show. This one's clearly to me at least, it's a level up on that. And I just was curious if you had some sort of
going back, and honestly, as I think I said when we first started talking about this, I have these memories of this show, but like I went back to look at like just flip through the episodes. And there are way more episodes of the original show than I ever watched.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was like a teenager, and like, it's a little bit like you guys talking about Star Trek, where it's like, oh, it was on the morning, and then you kind of get older and you had other stuff to do, and you know, you didn't always have a chance to catch it. And when you missed it, you missed it. And so you didn't really have the opportunity to follow along with it. A lot of my memories of stuff are from like the first season, because that's one I think I saw the most episodes of.
Yeah.
But there's like 4 or 5 seasons, and it's like, Yeah, I missed a lot of these. So I don't really have as much of a grounding in the, like, where this show has gone and what it's done, other than, you know, it likes to mine the comic book stories and do its own little takes on them. I think it will continue to do that, but also try to impart something more, which I think, as we've seen in this show, it's already tried to do a little bit.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of curious to see how that continues to play out.
Cool.
All right. Should we...
We got a little bit of sweep. We've got the Deadpool and Wolverine.
One letter too,
and a letter.
I was going to share. We had. Should we do our letter first and then a sweep?
Yeah, sure. Your choice, boss.
We got a letter from Jay, who wrote, just listened. I mean, read the 200th episode. I had forgotten you covered so many shows over the years. Your recap brought back good memories of both watching the shows and also listening to you three dissect them afterwards. He asked, will you be covering the new Fallout show at some point? I'm thoroughly enjoying it, and so far, it feels like a game adaptation that's in the same league as The Last of Us. Plus, what's more superhero than a naive vault dweller going forth in the wasteland to try and bring some good manners and decency to the ghouls and mutants? Anyway, looking forward to the next 200 episodes.
Thank you, Jay. That's very kind of you. I haven't seen it yet, but I want to see it, and it's funny.
I haven't watched it.
Because I was thinking...
I think it's very good.
You know, maybe in a dry spot.
I don't think it's a superhero show, though.
No? Okay. Is it?
Yeah. I don't think it falls within our purview, but
So I'm going to guess it's outside of the warp core, too? And even...
It's outside. It's
even
definitely not
a bad motivator? Yeah, it's...
And the bad motivator.
Okay.
Yeah. We need a new show.
Start a video game show.
Yeah. I'm super intrigued, and you know what? If after I watch it, you never know. We often just sprinkle random stuff into these shows, but I doubt we'll do a full episode on it. But maybe, who knows? Dan, do you have an interest in it at all, or is it difficult for you to watch?
I may watch it, but my backlog is very long. Exactly. Right now, yeah. You would appreciate that I am currently working my way through the previous season of Discovery because I had not finished watching it so that I can watch the current season of Discovery.
Yeah.
Well, good news
is the disco will dry up after this one, so you'll be able to
I'm going to catch up to where we are in Discovery being released. So,
yeah.
I had a couple other little posts on Mastodon to us that I wanted to catch up with. David wrote, this was in regards to our coverage of the first few episodes. We were specifically talking about Morph's powers. And he wrote, for what's worth, during the end credits, Morph's bio does say he takes on the physical traits as well as the likeness of the person. Not sure how they'll play into things. I want to note, because it happened in these episodes where he impersonates Quicksilver. And I had that moment of, where the hell did Quicksilver come from? And I had to go, because looked away for a minute.
Yep. I thought he just showed up. Like, oh, hey, Quicksilver's there.
It is a fun way to have weird little guest stars without being like, hey, we got to actually write something for this character. We can just have them zip around the screen. Or there's one coming up in the next episode that I was like, what the heck? And but he seems like the most powerful dude on the team.
Yeah, I kind of wouldn't mess with him, but
and maybe that's why he just wants to antagonize Logan so much. He's like, I got this, don't worry about it.
And then Lyle writes, solid, this is in regards to our Secret Origin or Wolverine Secret, I don't even remember what the name of this stupid movie is, X-Men Origins Wolverine. Solid listen. Yeah, this is the joke, actually. Solid listen for those like me without the discipline and dedication to actually sit down and watch X-Men Origins Wolverine 1, Part 1, The Beginning Origins. Appreciate the love for Watchmen. I feel like a lot of people still haven't seen it. Wasn't a zeitgeist show in the same way that The Dragon Show was, which I think is true, unfortunately, because I think it's much better than Game of Thrones, but
sure,
yeah,
they serve different purposes. Game of Thrones is like an escapist sort of, you know, there's a lot of characters.
I wouldn't describe Watchmen as escapist.
No, yeah. No,
I don't know if Game of Thrones ended up being as escapist as I would liked, but hey,
sure,
yeah,
yeah, but I mean, you know, it's Watchmen is pretty heavy, like you're not
Game
escaping from that.
It's otherworldly, whereas Watchmen, exactly. Even though it is technically another universe, it's very much the most prestigious of prestige dramas.
This one. I wouldn't call it The Last of Us escapist either. So I don't know about Fallout. Maybe Fallout is more fun, just because
it's. I think it's more fun.
The game has a sense. Fun. I don't know if you played the game. It's humorous.
I've never played the game.
There's a 1950s naivete to a lot of the stuff.
That's the same.
Mainly, I want to watch it because it's got Walton Goggins in it. I do love Walton Goggins.
Yeah, he's great.
Minus a nose.
He's great in everything.
Amazing.
He's just literally amazing. Good.
He is great in everything.
I do not think I have seen him in a bad role.
I want him back in, like, Ant-Man 3 was, it was fun. I liked it, but man, I would have just loved Paul Rudd versus Walton Goggins again. I think that would have been a lot more fun.
That guy can do everything is the other thing. Like, so not only have I seen him in two really fantastic dramas, The Shield and Justified.
Oh, I forgot he was in The Shield. Yeah,
he's so good in The Shield. He is so good in that. He's kind of despicable, but he is really good.
I never really watched enough of that show. Justified is like hands down one of the best shows, and he is despicable in it. Like,
but that one, he's more lovable in that, honestly, than he's awful, but he's more lovable and charming in that than in The Shield, where he is.
Yeah. He becomes more lovable. Like the first two are based off the short story. You gotta help me.
He wasn't supposed to be in it beyond that, but he was too good for them to take out.
He was too good. They're like, we gotta get him back. Yeah. Because what was the name of the short story?
Fire in the Hole.
Fire in the Hole. Yeah. Maybe that's the name of the pilot episode. I don't know. But like, if you haven't seen Justified, just go watch the Fire in the Hole, the first two or three apps, maybe. It's amazing. It's so good. Yeah. You'll be hooked. Yeah.
And then I was going to say, he also, a couple years ago, he did just like a straight up sitcom called The Unicorn, which is very funny. It also had, what's his name in it? Rob Corddry was also in it.
Wow.
And I thought about it, John, you'll appreciate it. There's an episode where the three guys who are all like middle-aged guys, friends, all go to get colonoscopies together. And it's very, very funny. It's basically about a guy who is a widower and he has raising two teenage daughters. And it's about him starting to date again now that, like, you know, a couple of years after his wife has passed away. And it sounds like a bummer, but it is a incredibly well-written and funny show. It sadly only lasted two seasons, but it's really, honestly, if you can dig it up, worth watching. Because, he's just playing like a straight, like affable, like dad character, and he's really good.
That's great, yeah. Yeah, him and Timothy Oliphant, like basically jacks of all trades.
All right. So as a reminder, if you want a student, send us a letter. You can hit us up at biff@theincomparable.com or find us on Mastodon at biff@zeppelin.flights. Let's do a little superhero sweep to round things out.
The failure to perform a rating ritual is entirely intentional. That this notice was clearly dropped in after the recording in no way implies otherwise. A full ritual will be performed after all the episodes have aired. Unless they forget.
Thank you for saving the Wolverine versus Deadpool trailer for me.
Yeah,
I've forgotten.
Yeah. I did just a little watch.
Just, I don't know if we described this to you. Like, John wanted to do a Dwarf Corps, and I agreed enthusiastically because, like we said at the top, like spending an hour chatting about something fun was, I think, what we both needed last Friday. But what we, I wasn't sure if I was just going to put it into the bonus feed or put it into the show. And like, so we recorded just a little Biff thing. And then ultimately I just ended up putting it into the Biff feed.
I think that was the right answer. But.
Yeah. That's what I didn't want to ask you because it was supposed to be a surprise / annoyance to you. I forgot it was your birthday. I forgot it was your birthday the next day. Cause I would not have done something that was kind of designed to be a jerk to you. Like, anyway,
it's fine. I've listened to about half of it.
Well, I mean, it's just us babbling, so you'll be okay.
Yeah,
well,
I was listening to the Star Trek. I was just there for the Star Trek content. That's all.
Perfect. But specifically, I really enjoyed this trailer, and I did not want to touch it without you because it's a lot of fun, and it is one of the more fun things I think we've had to look forward to in a year or so, I guess.
I'm curious, we haven't really gone into detail on this before, and we haven't explicitly covered them, but the first two Deadpool movies, of which I have not yet watched the second one. I've only seen the first one, but I just rewatched the first one, like literally yesterday as we record this. So it is fresh in my mind. And I think I have very, very conflicting feelings about Deadpool in general, because I think what the stuff I love about these are the like meta narrative, fourth wall breaking, like commentary. I think that it like is really, and Ryan Reynolds' general charm really worked for me. Some of the humor is a little bit sophomoric for me and doesn't really land because it's so over the top. And some of the violence is like, it's cartoonish because it's so ridiculous and sometimes very funny and sometimes a little bit too much. But in general, I admire his commitment to delivering exactly what he believes is Deadpool. Yes. And I can't argue with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel the same way.
Yeah. I mean, he clearly enjoys it so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. My favorite Easter egg, honestly, from the first movie, which I did not get until now, is there's a bit where he has a little action figure that is the version of him from Wolverine Origins with the knife hands.
Oh, yeah.
Made me laugh. Oh, I get that now because it's from that stupid movie.
Yeah.
You really should try
you should
to
see
find
the second movie.
Exactly. That's exactly what it's going to say.
Oh, it's queued up. I'm going to watch it next because I think there
is
maybe some.
It really has heart. Yeah. Like, I saw it in the cinema and I was a little reticent to go because I'm like, okay, I kind of like the first one despite myself. I'm like, I don't like this character.
Better than you expect, honestly.
I did. I went to see the second one in the cinema.
Well, it's got enough heart that it pulls it through, right? I mean, it's coarse and it's ridiculous and sophomoric and disgusting. But it still has enough heart that it makes it worthwhile story.
Exactly. That's why the second one, I think, really cemented it for me, that it was not a fluke. It was not like, oh, okay, this was a deemed project for you. You did a thing. And then maybe the second one is just going to be like, why don't we just double down on fart jokes or whatever the heck it is. Fart jokes would be on the more pleasant side of what some of those jokes are about. Yeah. But and that's not really my jam. But heart, it's got heart. It's got so much heart that I forgive it for.
It's like it's like
jokes that don't work for me work.
Peacemaker,
exactly.
Yeah.
It's the same kind of thing. Yeah, it's one of those things where the writing and the portrayal overcomes my dislike for the character. Like we were saying about John Bernthal and the Punisher, he somehow made it work for me with that writing, and especially in the first season and the second season too, I think, to some degree. Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool is really working for me. He's just got a whole bunch of heart, so I'm actually really looking forward to this one. And from the trailer, just to get back to what we were actually talking about, they give Hugh some real work to do. I think
he's feeling feelings on those bones, you know?
So it seems like he's a different Wolverine, like he's from a different universe than
I think
the one that we have known through the X-Men movies,
right? I mean, and given that they I think explicitly discussed, like, in some of the interviews and stuff, like there's a story going around this week actually about Kevin Feige telling Hugh Jackman, like,
yeah,
you should not come back because you don't want to ruin the ending of Logan, basically.
I think this is intent.
I think because he's like, Logan is so good, like you should not come back because, like, it's, you don't want to cheapen that.
That gives me so much respect for Feige. It's like, basically, he's talking to a stack of millions of dollars and he's saying, hey, you know what? Why don't you take a hike, stack of millions of bucks? Because I think it's gonna ruin the art. You know, like, that's, it's cool. It's cool for him to do that.
Yeah, and then there's a quote from Jackman too, saying, like, he was like debating all of it, and like, he's like, I took a drive by myself for an hour and I like thought about it and I was like, man, what do you really want to do? And he's like, I want to make this movie. It looks fun. Like, and so he, you know, was like, all right, I'm in. But it does seem like they're going with a different multiversal direction. I mean, he's wearing the blue and yellow suit.
Yeah, for heaven's sake, looks more like the cartoon we've just seen, to be honest. It could be.
Yeah, right, exactly. Right.
Yeah.
And I think he says at some point when he put it on, he's like, why didn't we do this earlier? This is awesome. This is right.
Great. It's great.
It looks real good. I mean,
that's what I was saying when we did the first X-Men movie. It was like, the black is overdone. Do the actual costumes and just do them well.
Wait till you hear that joke that Dan just set up for you earlier.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm just not, at this point, we've always thought this dumb little joke, but whatever. It's going to be fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
Also, the two of those guys clearly have a lot of chemistry and rapport and are really good friends, right? And that to me is what I'm looking for is like, these are two characters that have not interacted on screen since this terrible movie that we watched recently, and yet are intrinsically tied together, both in terms of the actors and the characters.
Yeah.
And I kind of love that.
I don't know what it is about Ryan Reynolds making fast friends with people that he's been in stinking movies with, but out of Green Lantern, he's pals with Taika Waititi and he married Blake Lively. So, and now he's best buds with Hugh Jackman. It's like, if you put that guy in a real stinker of a movie, he'll make the best of it by just making great friends.
Whatever the opposite is of a monkey's paw, he had that.
Yeah, exactly. Also, I've been watching Welcome to Wrexham, and there's just a lot of heart there and all that. Like, I don't like to project or assume that, like, the public face of people is like how they actually are, kind of thing. But, you know, you do enough projects that seem good-natured and all of that. I hold him in high regard in terms of, I think he's a good character, you know, he's a good...
You're loving him because he's a Canadian, I know this. I know this is how we roll here.
If anything, I've got to demote him. I got to stack rank him against other Canadians rather than, you know... But there's only eight of us, so it works out.
It's very easy, Yeah, the deal with the devil he made was like, but you have to like hawk commercials from a cell phone company, and he's even charming.
It's his cell phone company, though.
I know, it's the worst. Right, he's like, oh, what if I take that and flip that on its head? He's too good at this.
The Easter eggs in this trailer are delightful, of course, and I don't think we need to go through all of them. But
I don't think
if
we
you
could.
Like the Liefeld's feet. Liefeld's only feet joke that appears in the background when the two of them walk out. Liefeld's just feet. That's what we have that shirt now for sale on Cotton Bureau.
Oh wow. So oh dang.
Check
We're
it
so
out.
Good at that. And by we, I mean John.
I saw that and I was like, oh, I can't leave that alone. I've gotta make that.
Do they make slippers? Can you make like Liefeld slippers that are just kind of warped and like really screwed up looking?
Just pointy.
You're just pointy. So what else do we see here? Clearly TVA action going on. We see him.
There's a giant dead Ant-Man.
Ant-Man, yeah, with a skull. Weird. Skull. Awesome. Yeah. Love it.
Eliath is there.
Eliath is there.
Shows up, rolling across the... And at the very end, they jump into a Doctor Strange portal.
Yeah.
Yes, I saw that too. Yeah. I don't know what's going on in any of this.
We have no idea what's going on here.
100% here for it.
They actually jump out of the skull into the portal.
Yeah, this looks weird and delightful.
The baddie is...
Cassandra Nova.
Well, that's what we
Cassandra
think,
right? Nova is, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think it's definitely.
Oh, it's for sure? Cassandra, okay. I mean, definitely, yeah, I like, visually, it seems like that. She's messing with Wolverine in a way that seems to, you know.
Right, she's got Charles's powers, basically.
Played by, I forgot her name, Emma, British actress who was in the Crown. She played Princess Diana in the Crown.
Yep, she did.
And she was also in Pennyworth.
I think they.
Yes, that's right. Emma Corrin. They were also in Pennyworth, where they played.
Oh, really?
Alfred's fiance in like the first half of the first season.
Oh, okay.
As unfortunate things happened to them.
I still haven't watched enough of that show, even though
it's a good show.
Yeah, I keep saying that.
Anyways, they're really good, and it's kind of fun to see them in a action role. So
yeah,
I'm intrigued to see how that plays out.
I think it'll be a lot of fun. What do you guys think about? Does this tie into the greater, overly complicated MCU Kang time travel-y kind of thing? I feel in some way it has to, and I feel in another way.
I think they've already shown scenes from MCU movies in the TVA in the previous trailer. I can't remember the character's name, his Mobius, whoever he is.
It's
says,
Matthew
McFadden. Are you ready to join a bigger universe or something like that?
Yeah.
And there are clips from MCU movies.
Paradox? Is that his name?
Yes, I think that's right. Yeah, and fourth wall break. I mean, is this our TVA? Is this another multiverse's TVA? Are they all connected in some way?
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of ways you can hand wave around it, and I don't really think it's important.
I think there should only be one TVA. I don't know that. I mean, that's
they're managing all the multiverses,
so it seems they would do two for some reason. But I think there should allow me to be Iman Vellani, if I may, for a minute.
Yeah. and say
if Kevin Feige let them do two TVAs, he's doing it wrong.
I think so too. It's like, so now you've got two Uatu, the Watchers. Like, what's the point?
Right.
Who watches the Watchers?
Uh huh.
That's my zing.
Who TVA's the TVA?
Oh, that reminds me. I totally forgot about that. The fact that the Watcher shows up in that X-Men episode, in the Genosha episode, which is
the head. Yep. Like, it's floating
in the clouds. A little cameo. And I kind of thought that was really great. And like, also, it's just enough of that foreboding moment of like, why is the, like, if you're ever at a place and the Watcher shows up, you're like, I should leave.
Yeah.
I missed it. I missed it the first time I watched it. And then I read about it and I had to go back and like,
Yeah.
I think that's another score in the column of like, Genosha is going to stick around. Like, if you're planning to unwind it by the end of the season, having the Watcher, like, why would you put the Watcher? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't think you need to math this out that much.
It signifies that it's a big deal.
I guess, is Deadpool 3 going to be an inciting incident for the stuff? I tend to think no. Honestly,
I would say not necessarily an inciting incident.
It's more of a side effect than
it's a fun ball pit to play in, basically.
It is weird that we are this deep into this series phase of movies and it still feels like it's all over the place. there's all this weird, like, we've had like four different multiverse movies and there's no real connection between them. Is just feels a little odd. So I don't know where this is going, but if you want to try to bring a little order to it, sure, that's fine. If not, it's no worries. Whatever.
It's a bit of a second album. What's it called? Sophomore slump. Is that what you guys call it?
Mm-hmm.
We don't really have sophomores in Canada. I'm an idiot. I don't know what that means. But basically, the second outing is more difficult than the first, right? And if the first is the Infinity Saga thing, this one's a bit like, okay, we kind of, you know, the album order, the tracks came out in order we didn't anticipate. Like, it's kind of a mess. Like, it's not quite holding together as well as their first effort in giant world building. Hopefully they can pull it out and then, you know, turn it around for the next one, I guess. I don't know. But I mean, like, we've said this a few times. We're 20 years in now, almost. No, 14, 15. 2008, right? So
we got a few more years, but still.
Not quite 20, but it's like a lot. So, you know, maybe things run their course and we have to take a little bit of a breather. But,
well, I mean, this is literally the only Marvel movie coming out this year, which is in and of itself kind of a, you know, disturbance in the force, if you will. So,
bad motivator.
All right. Any other superhero sweep, or should we wrap up? We've gone on pretty long.
I think we should wrap up. Yeah, it'll be about now by the time we edit it.
I believe we will return in a couple weeks to talk about The Wolverine, another movie about Wolverine.
Yeah. Incrementally better.
Better. Exactly. I think it's definitely better.
Yeah. For every piece of punctuation they remove, it just gets better.
I'll have to say
letters. Just the number of letters.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say I've been watching Shogun, and I feel like there are some connections with the Wolverine, and I'm kind of interested to jump into that. But yeah, we'll be back to talk about the Wolverine, and we'll wrap up our X-Men coverage in the following episode. And you know, we're moving along at a good clip. We got some other stuff to talk about. Looking forward to it. I would, of course, like to thank all of our listeners and all everybody who wrote in with letters. We really appreciate it. We love having your engagement with this show because it's a show with no ads, and we are entirely dependent on the love of our listeners. And we love you back, all of you.
Yes, except when we stick you with a Star Trek episode you did not want.
You didn't sign up for.
Yeah, sorry. But we liked it.
I was literally not here. I could do nothing. I just want everybody to know that.
That's why we did it.
Yeah,
I know. Well, I'm glad I've, you know, brought a little organization back to this show. And of course, I would also like to thank my co-hosts. John Maltz, thanks for being here.
Bamf.
Oh, God, that's good,
such a good Nightcrawler sound
effect.
That's
a really good one. Yeah, he's kicking ass this season, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a good version of Kurt. Yeah. I forgot Kurt was a priest, too.
Yeah.
You're
going to enjoy the next one. Yeah.
I do like some Kurt. Guy English, always a pleasure.
It's always a lot of fun, and readers should check out your A Complicated Profession podcast, because the Bad Batch has come to an end, and I'm very eager to hear what you and Kat and Tony have to say about it.
We'll probably be recording that next week. Episode
tomorrow sometime.
The episode may be out before this episode is out, just based on our general release schedules.
I was so sure you're about to say just based on how incompetent Guy is and actually turning
this is when these things tend to come out. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. I'm aiming for Monday, so we'll see. But yeah. Oh yeah, you do it on the weekend, right?
We usually do on Sunday. Yeah. Or we record Saturday night and I release on Sunday morning.
Okay.
But thank you, everybody out there, for listening. As a reminder, shoot us an email, biff@theincomparable.com, at biff@zeppelinduffflights on Mastodon, if you want to chime in. And we'll be back next week. We now return you to your regularly scheduled episode of The Warp Core, already in progress. And that's why I love Star Trek.